You're now listening to the College Hotline Podcast with your host, John Wilner.
Welcome to the College Hotline Podcast. I'm John Wilner, and we're going to get right to it because my guest this week has got almost no free time. He's Adam Jude, the ace Washington football beat writer for the Seattle Times, and he is a busy guy these days. Thank you very much, Adam, for joining me, squeezing me in.
Absolutely. Only a few more holiday days for the holiday shopping to get done here. So trying to squeeze it all in, but glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So what is the team schedule at this point in terms of practice, Christmas break, and travel?
Yeah, it's actually really light right now for the players themselves. They have finals this week, and so they don't have any practice at all. They're doing some, you know, light lifting, some light running. But Chris Peterson, I think he's evolved in terms of the way he prepares for bowl games, and particularly with a New Year's Eve, I guess, this year, but a later bowl game. He really wants to give his players, I think, the better part of 2 weeks off to let them rest and recover from the season. You know, they played the 13 games of the Pac-12 championship game, and I think they really needed it. The Huskies, to me, looked pretty tired and pretty beat up by the end of the year. It was hard to tell, I suppose, with the big win over Colorado, but certainly a team that needed some rest, and they're getting that now. They had two practices this last weekend, but then they're getting all this week off, and they'll have five light practices starting this Saturday, Sunday, and then they get, after that, 3 days off to go home for the holidays, and then they're all we'll meet up again in Atlanta on Christmas Day to kind of get the bowl week going there. But so for the most part, a pretty light week, and they really won't kind of hit Alabama game prep stuff really hard until next week, and then when they get to Atlanta.
There's always the concern, and I'm sure Peterson has dealt with this too. You don't want to overload your players physically or mentally with game planning stuff. You know, it's much better, it seems, to stick with much more of a regular season approach in terms of really getting into the game plan, you know, a week or so before kickoff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we did get the one chance we've got to talk to the players was last Saturday since the bowl pairings were done. So obviously we wanted to get, you know, their initial thoughts on Alabama and being big underdogs for the first time this year. And most of the players themselves, you know, they said they hadn't really done a whole lot of study or prep for Alabama yet. And the guys who had done some prep sort of just did that on their own, of course. You know, Trey Adams, the Huskies, superb left tackle. He's going to be matched up mostly against Jonathan Allen, or at least that's what he's anticipating. And obviously Jonathan Allen is Alabama's great defensive lineman, maybe the number one pick in the NFL draft. So Trey Adams wanted to get a jump on that, see what he was in store for. And obviously he said, you know, they'd seen Alabama play here and there throughout the season on national TV. And as he said, you know, they're on SportsCenter every week. So, of course, we've seen them. But in terms of the coaches and the specific game planning, preparing stuff, I don't think they've gotten into that with the players at all yet. So it kind of tells you where their mindset is. Again, just, hey, focus on your finals. Rest, recover, again, do some light weight lifting, some light running. But in terms of actually preparing for the bowl game, I don't think they've done much of a deep dive into that yet at all.
I should mention you can follow Adam on Twitter at @A_Jude. And what has impressed you, if I could take a quick step back here? And Adam, for those who don't know, covered Oregon for years during the Chip Kelly era. What has impressed you the most about what Chris Peterson has done, and has it happened, you know, faster than you expected?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe not all that much quicker or sooner than I anticipated. I was looking at 2017 next year as a real potential breakthrough year for these guys, thinking that they'd be, you know, take that next step this year. I mean, I think people have already forgotten they were only 6-6 in the regular season last year. They had to win their last two games just to become bowl eligible. Then they won the bowl game, you know, a middling bowl game, Heart of Dallas Bowl against Southern Miss. So they won their final three games to get to 7-6 last year. And I think we kind of underestimated maybe what that momentum meant for those guys because they were so young last year. It was the youngest offense in school history. Jake Browning was a true freshman quarterback. Trey Adams was a true freshman left tackle. Miles Gaskin was a true freshman running back. I mean, you're talking about core pieces right there that are obviously a huge part of the success they've had this year on offense. I was still looking at, you know, you go from 6-6. I thought 9-3, you know, maybe 10-2 this year was realistic. I don't think it was necessarily fair to kind of place some of the expectations people had on this team this year. Chris Peterson certainly didn't think it was fair at every turn. Every chance he had this summer, he would kind of shoot down the hype. And we know he hates the attention in any way. But when it came on full force like it did this summer leading up to Pac-12 Media Days, he kind of just chuckled at it and said, hey, we haven't done anything yet. We haven't earned this at all. I don't know why everyone's kind of putting the cart before the horse. Now he even says, he said it in a press conference this week, basically saying, oh, everyone got lucky that, you know, we did this. We didn't deserve all that hype coming in. But, you know, give folks some credit, obviously, who saw some of this coming. Again, I thought they had a chance to be really good this year, not necessarily elite good. But here we are, year three, and it makes me think back to the beginning of the season, the first weekend of the year, the New York Times had a headline, paraphrasing it, said something like, you want to win a national championship, hire a new coach and wait 3 years. And they specifically used Chris Peterson and the Huskies as their prime example there. And here we are. They get a chance to play the number one team, maybe the best team Chris Peterson's ever coached against in Alabama.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to get that shot. So, yes, it's ahead of schedule in my thinking, just because, you know, the core of this offense is a bunch of sophomores right now. They're going to be juniors next year. And again, the core of the defense right now is a bunch of juniors and seniors. So I thought, if some of those guys came back next year, 2017, they would still kind of have the core of that elite defense back as well. Again, they're ahead of schedule, and to me, I think 2017 could be just as good next year, depending on, you know, some of these potential NFL, high NFL draft picks, what they decide here in the next month or so. Abuda Baker, Sidney Jones, Elijah Qualls, John Ross, to name a few. They're all going to have a chance to make that jump. If one or two of those guys come back, again, I think you're looking at another potential Final Four team in 2017.
You got any gut feeling on any of those guys?
On those guys, yeah, that's the big question. And I've been trying to, do some reporting on that, obviously, the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it's hard for those guys. Again, we don't have a ton of access to them right now. They're trying to do finals. And they know those questions are coming as well. So they're trying to put that on the back burner, at least publicly, until after the playoffs are over with, and they want to be able to make that decision without a game or the national attention kind of screaming down their face a little bit. But if I had to venture a guess, I would say most of those guys make the jump. I mean, I think John Ross for sure, coming off two major knee injuries last year, the season he's had, 16 touchdown receptions. I mean, he's made the entire difference for this offense. I mean, for as Absolutely. Good as Jake Browning has been, I know you would kind of picked Ross as your Pac-12 player of the year, and I think there's a great case for that. He made Jake Browning look spectacular at times when maybe Jake Browning just made an average throw. John Ross turned it into a spectacular touchdown catch. We saw the latest example of that against Colorado in the Pac-12 championship game, when John Ross went up for the one-handed catch on a pass Browning admitted he was trying to just throw away as he was falling down, and it turned out to be a touchdown catch. So, I think John Ross probably goes. A lot of people are projecting him to be a first-round pick. Sidney Jones is not getting the attention on a lot of these All-America teams that I thought he would get, in large part because he doesn't have the stats to back up the hype. In large part because a lot of quarterbacks just avoided his side of the field. So he's kind of one of those lockdown corners that had kind of a quiet season statistically, just because, he didn't let anyone get open, and he didn't have a chance to get a bunch of interceptions or anything like that. So those two guys, I think, are probably close to being locks to leaving, Sidney Jones and John Ross. And then I think Buda Baker is a guy who's going to give it serious consideration too. And again, if I had to guess, I'd say he probably would make the jump. I don't think he'll end up being a first round pick, just because his size is going to worry some NFL personnel. He put on about 15 pounds this offseason to get up to about 190, 192. And he carried that really well. He's had an All-America season. But again, he's only 5'9", 5'10", and that size is going to scare off some teams. He's got a comparison here in Seattle and Earl Thomas, but obviously Buda Baker isn't at that level yet. But that's kind of what some people will project him to be, and that obviously will help Buda Baker's stock. But if he can be, if people will tell him he can, he's definitely a second round pick, then I think that's going to be really hard for Buda Baker to turn down as well. And then Elijah Qualls is kind of the fourth guy who I would say is probably going to go as well. Again, I think Mel Kiper had him as a top 15 pick early in the year. I don't see quite that happening. I mean, he's kind of a freak athlete at 320 pounds. But I think he's a little undersized just in terms of his, you know, length, that NFL personnel in terms of that archetype that they ideally want in the middle of your defensive line. So I think he's more of probably, if I had to guess, a second round pick, which again should give him some pause if he comes back and has a dominant senior season like Danny Shelton did for the Huskies a couple years ago. And he ended up being a top 15 pick. Again, I think that's something Elijah Qualls will have to weigh. But to me, all four of those guys right now, if I had to, you know, gun to your head, I'd say they all four do end up jumping.
When you got the chance, it's hard to say no.
Yeah.
With that injury bug. I totally agree with you about Jones. In fact, I voted for that. I was on the panel for the AP All-American team. I had Jones on there. I thought he was just fantastic. And you know, a shutdown corner makes everything so much easier on defense for everybody else. What I'm curious is that whether you have seen comparisons or contrast between how Chris Peterson goes about things and what you saw with Chip Kelly.
Yeah, that's a it's been a fun, unique perspective for me because I'd been around Oregon for so long, going back to Joey Harrington, Mike Bellotti days, and you know they crushed Colorado in the Fiesta Bowl, and yep. I was still in college there, and that was my first real taste, big taste of big time college football, and to see how Mike Bellotti went about things for a long time, and then obviously he brought in Chip Kelly, and I kind of got onto the beat full time at the Eugene Register Guard there, right when Chip Kelly arrived. And then when he took over as the head coach and you know, going to Boise, his first game in 2009 and losing to Chris Peterson on the blue turf there. And yep. Like you said, that it's interesting to kind of compare and contrast how two guys, two offensive minds like that, how they work and how they run a program. I think Chip Kelly was a lot more involved in the day-to-day, the detailed stuff of the offense, because that's just what he loved and what he was so good at. Obviously, he still called the plays for the offense when Mark Helfrich was the offensive coordinator there. So that's what Chip is. That's what he loves. He's the mad genius, all that stuff when it comes to the offense. And I think Chris Peterson, you know, had all those same labels. You think of Chris Peterson and sort of the trick plays, looking back to the Fiesta Bowl, all that stuff. And I'm actually going to write about this the next couple of weeks, but Chris Peterson hates that label. He hates that people think of him as the trick play guy, but you know, that's going to stick when you run a Statue of Liberty and all that great stuff he did, you know, 10 years ago this month in the Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma. But Chris Peterson is more of like a Don James comparison, the great coach for the Huskies for so long, where he's a true CEO of the program. He is intimately involved in the offense and the game planning and that stuff, but he lets Jonathan Smith, the offensive coordinator here, run the show on game days. It is a collaborative effort in a lot of ways, but Jonathan Smith calls the plays. He's more intimately involved with Jake Browning, as the quarterback's coach as well. And Chris Peterson manages the whole operation like a true CEO, like Mike Bellotti did. Yep. And Bellotti was one of Chris Peterson's mentors.
Yep.
When Chris Peterson was a longtime, you know, assistant coach, the wide receivers coach at Oregon in the 90s, too.
Right. So on the staff with exactly. Jeff Tedford, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously Tedford and Chris Peterson are close too. Tedford here this year as a, you know, offensive consultant analyst, whatever that really means. But, it has been interesting. The one, I guess, a commonality I would say is just their stubbornness. They have their way of doing things. They've got a proven track record and they're going to stick with it no matter I wouldn't say Chris Peterson is inflexible, but he has his way of doing things, and he's going to stick with it. And, you know, both guys don't like the media attention. I mean, obviously not a whole lot of coaches do, but they have a certain level of disdain for the spotlight and the media attention. And Chip wasn't shy at all about making that known. There'd be one or two days a week where, you know, you'd really get the irritable Chip Kelly, even during the good times at Oregon. Whereas, you know, Chris Peterson is genuinely a nice guy, and he's got his built for life recruiting themes that is very genuine. I mean, it's hard to fake that stuff over a long period of time. It does mean a lot to him. He's really developed that recruiting philosophy over a long period, going back to his days at Boise, and he's adapted and evolved that thinking as well. But, you know, he has once a week, he brings in guest speakers from the outside, and it can be a range of topics, from, you know, just to financial advisors to, you know, social issues. He brought in an Episcopal bishop this year to talk about, you know, some of the sort of Black Lives Matter and racial issues and social tensions that have been going on. I mean, he hits this stuff sort of head on. He doesn't want to kind of tiptoe around it with his players. He wants them to be involved. I mean, the election was a big talking point for the team this year. It wasn't something, you know, he tried to ignore. I mean, he wanted them to have discussions about it, and they did have deep discussions about it. And I think that's pretty unique. That's not something I've really been around a coach of a big time program playing for big time things in a season like this, where you know, he's purposely, you know, addressing these things head on during the week of a big game. And so, again, kind of going back to the question, Chip Kelly, Chris Peterson certainly have a lot of similarities, just in terms of the way they go about things and how stubborn they are and how persistent they are with their style. Their styles are a little bit different when it comes to the football. Obviously, Chip Kelly wants to ramp it up and go as fast as possible. And Chris Peterson, the moment he got here to UW, said, no, that's not the way we're going to do things. Even though the year before, Steve Sarkisian had such great success with Keith Price and Bishop Sankey, Austin Seferian Jenkins. They had a record-breaking season, you know, going up tempo. Steve Sarkisian made no bones about it that, hey, we're going to the Oregon style up tempo offense, and that was my first year making the switch to the beat up here in Seattle. So it was interesting going from Oregon to Steve Sarkisian, said, hey, we're going to become more like Oregon, and then immediately going to Chris Peterson, who said, hey, we're going to slow it down. We know Chris Peterson is all about kind of the misdirection and you know, changing formations before the snap and trying to create confusion for the defense. So he's very methodical, but every bit as stubborn as Chip Kelly as well.
I've always thought that, you know, this is true. Peterson's teams, Kelly at Oregon, Stanford falls into the category. Utah, too, I think. The programs that have an identity and a head coach who can execute and communicate that identity, that, and it trickles all the way through recruiting, how do you develop your personnel, your playbook, what you're doing on game day. Those are the programs that consistently have more success, and it's interesting how many teams in the conference have tried to be like other teams. You know, Sarkisian's trying to be, when he's in Seattle, he's trying to be like Oregon. Jim Mora this year trying to be more like Stanford. You gotta have a philosophy and stick with it and be able to communicate it, and that's, I think, what the best programs can do.
Yeah, and the interesting part with Peterson, I wrote about it with this summer too, specifically with their offense, because, you know, they struggled the last 2 years to move the ball consistently, and, you know, a big part of that was they had young quarterbacks, Siler Miles 2 years ago and Jake Browning, a true freshman last year. So it never felt like they had that identity or that, you know, that that one thing that they could kind of fall back on. But that's not what Chris Peterson wants either. I mean, he wants to be balanced. He wants to be unpredictable as much as anything. And so he wants multiple ways to be able to beat a defense. And I think that's one thing. And Mike McIntyre, you know, said it the Pac-12 championship game, was that the one thing he was amazed about Washington's offense is they always seem to come up with something every week, something new that, you know, the opponent hasn't seen before. And that's pretty rare in college football, because, you know, they have so little time, so little contact with these players. So you don't, and Chris Peterson says it too, you don't want to overload them with new things all the time, because you don't have time to rep it. You don't have time to perfect it in just 1 week, but they have enough stuff and enough wrinkles where they've done maybe a portion of it, or they've done a practice of a variation of this sort of formation or this set or this play, that it doesn't take them that long to get it down. And like you said, it seems like every week they have a new wrinkle to throw at a defense. And that is their identity, is that they're not easy to define and that they are multiple and that they can beat you in so many different ways.
Yeah, and the key, what you said, balance. They've always got the threat of the running game, which you have got, I think you've got to have in order to get to where they are. So looking ahead here, you know, from the outside, my big question against Bama, especially thinking to the USC-Washington game, is are they going to be able to protect Browning, let him stay on timing, on rhythm, because SC was able to get so much pressure, and now they're facing, you know, the best defensive front in the country. What two or three keys do you see to the game?
Yeah, no, I absolutely, you know, agree with you right there. I immediately look at UW's offensive line. I think they had their worst game of the season against USC. That speed, that size, that strength up front for USC really shut things down in a way nobody else has this year. And that's got to be troubling if you're the Huskies and a Husky fan, because if USC could do that, you know, with their elite level athletes, what is Alabama going to do with their even more elite level athletes? You know, you look at the mock NFL drafts. I mean, Alabama's defense, their front seven is supposed to have three of the top 10 picks next year. And I mean, it's a scary proposition if you're the Huskies. That said, you know, I think this UW offensive line is the most improved unit on this entire team. And, you know, outside that USC game, I think they've done a good job of keeping Jake Browning clean and healthy this year, giving him some time. And there's a huge difference when Jake Browning has, I don't know the exact time, but you give him 3 seconds to go through his progressions. I'm sure you can see, again, for any quarterback, you can probably say this, but I mean, I think for Jake Browning, as much as anybody, you can see such a huge difference when you give him that, you know, that extra bit of time versus maybe two versus 3 seconds. I mean, he's going to find that open receiver. I haven't been around a quarterback that grows through his progressions as fast as Browning does and knows where to go and anticipates as well as he does. We didn't see that against Colorado, but or USC. But that's the thing, is if they can give him, you know, just a little bit of time, keep him in the pocket, I think they've got a chance. If they don't, you know, I think it's going to be a long day for the Huskies. And that's the one thing, too. I actually caught up with Clay Helton yesterday, and that's the one thing he pointed to. It's like, hey, that was our plan. We wanted to get, obviously, you know, you say that every week, but we wanted to get make Jake Browning uncomfortable, get him off his spot, force him to make some quick decisions, which not a whole lot of teams have been able to do this year. And obviously USC did, and they were able to make him pay, because they also were able to shut down Myles Gaskin and UW's running game. I think the Huskies only had 17 rushing yards on 27 attempts in that game. And obviously that's, you know, you're not going to get anything done if you can't run the ball at all, like you said. So to me, that's the big thing. If Jake Browning, you know, he gets a couple weeks off here. I think he was pretty tired by the end of the year as well. So gets a couple weeks to get refreshed, get his arm healthy again. If he can be anything close to what he was sort of at midseason form, and if the offensive line can give him just enough time, I think they've got a chance. I'm not going to predict an upset right now, but I think it's going to be closer than people expect. I think the Huskies, you know, really love, I think Chris Peterson loves this idea of being an underdog, that nobody's giving him a chance. Again, it's interesting timing with, you know, 10 years later after the Fiesta Bowl, one of the greatest games in college football history. Nobody gave Boise State a chance to upset Oklahoma in that one either. And again, I'm not going to say that that's going to happen right now, but I think that the Huskies defense is good enough to hold Alabama's offense down enough. And if Jake Browning, if that offensive line can do just enough, I think they've got a shot.
I agree with you. I think the presumption that it's going to be a blowout is incorrect, especially when you look at what Peterson can do when he's got time to prepare. I can't wait to watch Ross and Pettis try to get separation on those Alabama cornerbacks. I think it's going to be just terrific. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of terrific matchups, too. Everywhere on the field, there's a bunch of pros on both teams. More on Alabama, right. But Washington's got some pros, too. So it should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, going down for a full week there to Atlanta. And the one thing I've been surprised about You know, is the response from the Husky fans. Obviously, they're excited, but they're ponying up too. Everyone's getting the checkbooks out. I mean, I think Huskies are on track here this week to sell out their allotment of 13,000 tickets, and a lot of Husky fans are making the long trip all the way down to Atlanta there, you know, getting their early Christmas presents and all that stuff. So I think it's going to be a pretty good turnout. Obviously, it's only, I think it's like 200-mile drive from Tuscaloosa to Atlanta.
Yep.
It's about 2,000 miles from Seattle to Atlanta, but I think it's going to be a pretty good turnout for the Husky fans, for sure.
I do too, and if Washington finds a way to win, what are those fans going to do? Are they going to fly back and then go to Tampa, or are they going to just, you know, hole up somewhere in southern Georgia for a week?
find a Motel 6 in the Panhandle or something like
that's
that.
Right.
That's a good question. Right, exactly. That'll be a good problem to have.
All right, well, look, I'll let you go. I know you got 10 million things to do here before you head to Atlanta. But I cannot thank you enough, Adam, for joining me. And I hope everything goes smoothly for you in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks, John, and happy holidays.
You too. Thank you very much. Take care.